all those stories in like this. Like, he used to anything. Eileen stairs at the steamed up when he was up across the road. Mess of a man. It was the only time he ever wanted to his hands, was John says. And to me, Billy, Clem, Clamp, and staring on me to make a point of not recoiling. It was just before my dad died.
She's still alive.
The truth is, the only time he ever fucks me was what John says. John rolls a cigarette at first to a social worker.
It's a hospital,
coughs up something.
Smell.
John whistles.
The truth is,
she's still alive.
Tune this old man.
What she could be
is anywhere deep before 360.
I want to move away.
The smell is
also this.
He's fucked.
What the smell is,
it's a hospital.
Piss.
John whistles.
You can use to anything.
What the smell is,
John has antiseptic.
Cunt under his breath.
Eileen's eyes.
It was just before my dad died.
John said.
I'm thinking.
Question.
Sometimes it gets
that you don't have
the
memory.
It was the
only
thing
you ever
really listened to.
Is what John says.
But the smell
is used to anything.
Ulcers.
You learn that.
John rolled a cigarette.
Mutters
cunt under his breath.
It's piss.
His mouth hangs
to the dam.
A mess of a knife.
Coughs up something.
Something
forces it back down.
Trying not to think of it.
Don't stare.
I want to tape his conversation.
Not recoiling.
I need to move away.
His mouth hangs.
Polite mess.
I don't stare.
Make a point to not recoiling.
Damn to hang on
me.
Eileen's eyes. Slits
was just before my dad died.
What she could be.
Truth is
anywhere between 40 and 60.
John rolls a cigarette.
Question.
Something to do with
it. It's a horrible
smell. Something.
What she
the truth
be.
Is
she's still alive, 40 and 60.
The truth is,
smell is
fucked.
Ulcers.
Truth is,
it was the only
the
thing
smell ever touched
me.
Is
what John says.
His mouth hangs.
All those stories in
messes. I'm
trying not to
think.
I
was not really listening.
You can use to anything
but his breath.
You learn that.
You can use to anything.
His mouth hangs.
The
mess of a mouth.
Is antiseptic.
I want to tape his conversation.
What the smell is.
I need to move away.
It's piss.
Polite.
What the smell
I don't
is.
Stare.
It's a
whole point of
smell.
Not recoiling.
What the smell is.
She's still alive.
It was the only thing
he ever heard from.
That's what John says.
Coughs up something.
Eileen's not really listening.
All her stories end like this.
The truth is,
he's fucked.
Eileen stares at
steamed up and goes
to the pub across the road.
It's a hospital smell.
It was the only thing he ever
touched
me,
is what John says.
He used to anything.
Clean,
clean, damp.
All the
stories
end like this.
All the stories end like this.
All the stories end like this.
All the stories end like this.
All the stories end like this.
All the stories end like this.
Гвяздо сбирка с ЮПИ. Гвяздозбир Цефеуша. Мала Недведица. Дужа Недведица. Гвяздозбир Смока. Гвяздозбир Ближнюнд. Гвяздозбир Быка. Гвяздозбир Единорожца. Малый пес. Великий пес. Гвяздозбир Ориона. Гвяздозбир Рака. Гвяздозбир Возницы. Гвяздозбир Андромеды. Mały pies. Wielki pies. Wielki pies. Gwiazdozbiór Andromedy.
This is Vincent Price. Darkness falls across the land. The midnight hour is close at hand. Creatures crawl in search of blood to terrorize your neighborhood. And whosoever shall be found without the soul for getting down must stand and face the hounds of hell and rot inside a corpse's shell. The foulest stench is in the air, the funk of 40,000 years, and grisly ghouls from every tomb are closing in to seal your doom. And though you fight to stay alive, your body starts to shiver, for no mere mortal can resist the evil of the thriller. It's great fun. Okay. All right.
I could hear the music playing as I came up to the door. And once inside, I felt the beat of feet upon the floor. Had Gow himself been there that night, he couldn't have disapproved. As sets of reels got settled in a most insistent groove, the fiddlers fired the music to each corner of the bar, and the rhythm swung like bassy on piano and guitar. And keening bright above the rest, the small pipes let the splore. The call went up for dancers. Frank and Maggie took the floor. The players stopped to catch their breath. The dancers gasped for air. The piper stood and loosed his straps and stowed his pipes with care. And as he stepped towards the bar, a voice was heard to say, "You look to me the kind of man could play a sweet Strathspey. I have that reputation and it's kind of you to say, but I've got a demon thirst on me I haven't got all day. Well, hold that drink a minute now and look at what I've here. A set of pipes worth more of your time than any pint of beer. The drones are turned from boxwood and the chanters bound with gold. Finest beeswax, hemp and leather, here I'll give ye them to hold." The piper looked in wonder as those pipes came out the case. He strapped them on and closed his eyes, and quiet fell the place. The devil in the kitchen and the wrathy Marcus Rant, George the Fourth and Stumpy and the Boba Fetter Cairn, as each Strathspey outshone the last, he swore he knew no more. But still the tunes came tumbling out from some forgotten store. He played Strathspeys and reels and jigs he never thought he knew. And when at last the outpour stopped, the silence round him grew. until the shock of what they'd heard from everyone did burst in cheers and yells and shrieks and stamps, which by and by dispersed. And as they did, the piper turned and to the maker said, "What enchantment is there here, and was it really me who played? There's fearful stories of these things I've heard the old folk tell. I fear the hands that made these pipes were guided straight from hell." The maker smiled at him and said, "I understand your fear, but the wood and leathers of this earth, no magic is there here. I will admit these pipes could be the finest ever made, but that would count for not one thing if they were never played. There's music in them right enough, there's music in you too, and the one requires the other for that music to come through. The pipes unlocked the music that was waiting in your soul, and you unlocked the instrument and made the circle whole."
We moved house every couple of months. One time the landlord wanted us to sell the house, so we moved as soon as possible, not wanting to hang about in the smoky air and meet prospective buyers and tidy away the socks. We moved before because of the neighbourhood, the neighbours, damp, overcrowding and even change of city, which was rather an expensive one. I counted up how many times I'd moved in 13 years and it came to 30. Somehow that seemed quite normal to us. We moved like hunted animals, except no one was interested in hunting us down. We saw news reports of murderers who moved often in case people became suspicious and it meant they would cover their tracks, but we had no desire to kill anyone. It would always just happen. We would move into a new house, move the furniture around a few times, then decide we were bored and move on. We lost money, savings, books, clothes, records and so many other forgotten things in our eternal trek. What was this restlessness and why did we have it? Surely we could resolve our feelings in a way that didn't require us to spend money and move. This restless nature saw us hiring and driving vans, meeting people for keys, cleaning out old houses to get deposits back, and then moving into new places and getting our smell all over the house. It was what we did, and we did it well. We tried to hold down jobs so we could afford the moves, but some employers got fed up of us moving around so much and taking time off to move and then to recover. But we thought about it and then we moved jobs. It was easy and there was always variety. Our parents and friends' phone and address books were fit to burst and we sent news constantly of our moving and leaving. People found it difficult to keep up, but we just enjoyed the moment and moved on. We had a set of letters from different landlords which were a testament to our regime. We cleaned and dusted and polished each place before we moved in completely. And then when we moved, we again filled in cracks and walls with polyfiller and painted over holes. We had even filled in the holes of a cabinet with sealant and had painted in line with the wood effect that was there. We were masters in the fine art of moving. We had it off to a T and certain that our place in the world was to move, clean, live for a while in somewhere new, and then move and clean and then start over it. And then start over again. And if landlords and agencies wanted to give us plaudits in the form of model tenant letters, then of course we would take that mantle. It was a cinch for us. Things started to change with the bottle. The bottle was a green glass chunky bottle that Jerry's father had left in a windowsill before he died, and he'd filled it in with £1 coins. We started to add our own, and by the end of 6 months we had over £100, and we counted it out before our next move, taking each coin out and putting in a pile of 10, writing down the amount and returning to the jar and screwing the lid back on. We had used a lot of the money from our wages from the move, so we decided to dip into the bottle and use £50 of it towards our removal man and van. The day came, and we were loading stuff up into the van and running up and down stairs to our tenement when we heard a smash upstairs. The man with van had tried to lift the bottle. He didn't realise how heavy it was, and then the next thing it crashed to the floor and the money rolled everywhere. He shouted his apologies, and by the time we got into the kitchen, he was gathering up the money and sticking it in a carrier bag that was within another carrier bag. We then stuck it in another carrier bag and got on. Once we had moved and we were unpacking, we decided to sort out the change. When we opened the bag, we discovered that there was only £30 left out of the 110. Neither of us had touched the money. We'd paid the man £50, so £30 was missing. We were slightly upset that the money, which we needed, was gone, and that our trust and good juju from moving was suddenly starting to feel strange. The man didn't know us, we hadn't known him, but in 13 years of moving, this had never happened, and it felt like we had been slightly soiled in some way. So we decided not to bother trusting a removal man again. It was always a man, we'd never met a female mover before. We lived in that flat for 5 months, and having heard the man upstairs crying in the most heart-rending manner and retching, as though he'd eaten a meal every night that had gone down the wrong way, or was on the verge of a nervous breakdown, what was going on up there, we felt that the bottle had spoiled this place for us, and we looked in the listings again. We found another house a few streets down and started to pack. By this time, we were finding money really tight. We had moved so often that we were only ever winding up our account with one facilities company and paying off final bills from the last place when we were moving on to the next. This meant we had to physically move everything ourselves, as we thought if we just moved things round the corner by ourselves, carrying records and books and clothes and black bin bags, then we'd be saving what money we had. We had the keys for the new place a week before we were due to move out of the other, and despite the fact we found a slug in the kitchen floor and some packets of DHL suits in a cupboard with a bottle of vodka and a half-hearted suicide note, we carried on with the move. We piled the boxes and bin bags in and returned to our current house. Jerry had hurt his back in the third trip round, and I dropped some crockery, which went down like a lead balloon, as it was his only inheritance from his dead uncle. This all meant we could only take small things round during the day, and even then Jerry had a problem putting them down on the floor. My work had called and wondered when I'd be coming back, and we had hatched a cunning plan to tell them I was overcome with flu and would be back in a week. This would give me the opportunity to set up the house as I needed it to be and give me time to clean out the old place and get our deposit back, as we were going for our 30th model tenant letter from a landlord. So there we were, not in our prime, Jerry with a bad back and me with a guilty feeling as I'd broken the cups and both of us feeling exhausted since the upstairs crier had been going at it all night again, retching and crying, and we hadn't had much sleep. We dragged the last of our possessions round from the old house in a shopping trolley. One of our friends saw us from the other side of the road and shouted that he hoped it hadn't got that bad, i.e. were we really living as bag people and pushing all our possessions around in a shopping trolley. We didn't look so hot, I thought, as we passed the shop window, what with Jerry and his limp because of his back and me wearing my oldest moving clothes. This time, when we moved in, Jerry didn't take as much interest in the house. It was almost as though he decided he couldn't do it anymore and he wanted to just lie down in a dark corner and not deal with anything. I had to phone his work and say he wouldn't come in because of his back, but the thing was, he was like the boy that cried wolf, as he'd been off so many times with fake illnesses, his nickname at work was actually Wolfie, that now with his back, they really didn't believe him at all. I cleaned and attempted to get our smell into the place, but it just didn't seem the same doing it on my own. We looked into the carrier bag within the carrier bag and found that we only had £18.32 left, so it was decided that I should try and get a second job for the first couple of months in a new place. So I started working in a bookshop 3 nights a week to supplement my work during the day at the library. It was fine as I worked in the pop psychology section, and I found that looking at some of these books made me realise we were doing the right thing. As it said in most of the books, that change was good, and if it was essential for your life, and if you continued to include change in your life, then you couldn't really go wrong. One of them said that you had to act in life like a shark. You had to move constantly ahead, and if you stopped, you would die. I liked that, and I thought, unbeknownst to Maya Xavier, the writer based in LA and the author of Moving Ahead, The Path to the Life You Deserve, we had been living this life to the full and existing this way for many years. A couple of weeks after we moved in, Jerry was still off work, lying on a board in the living room, taking painkillers. He lay there for part of the day as his back was so sore, and he felt it helped him for the rest of the day in some strange way. He'd been on the phone when I came home, and I had heard him saying goodbye to someone and thanking them. He acted surprised to see me so early. Obviously, the drugs were making him slightly strange, as I said to him that I was always home at this time on a Tuesday. He went red and blurted out they'd contacted both an estate agent and a housing association, and that he thought we should look for a permanent residency. This injury had been a wake-up call to him, he said. The moving was over. All those years of bubble wrap and banana boxes ground to a halt in those few seconds, and I felt a silence in the room which scared me as Jerry turned his head to the wall. I burst into tears and then made myself a cup of tea. 1 month here and this is his feelings. How long had we been together? Well, in reality, it was 5 years, but it felt longer. And then I remembered that before him it was Chris who moved and shunted for 2 years, and then before him Ed who had packed and house hunted for 3 years. All these different people in all these different houses. Was this it? Was this the end? I wiped the tears off my face and heard Jerry try to get up, and I blew my nose. What to do? I couldn't think straight for a moment. My head hurt. I thought, this is it. I'll have to go it alone. Then I remembered I had noticed on my way up the street there was a studio flat for rent on Assasia Drive.
I'm in a barber shop. I'm in a barber shop with
Danilo Fonti.
And I'm with Chris, who is about to get his first haircut.
In 20 years.
And it happens to be happening in Cuba. How are you feeling?
Scared.
How many tranquilizers and how many sticks of chewing gum?
Serious painkillers.
So how easy is it in a place like Pinar del Rio to get new customers?
Y bueno, ¿cuán fácil o difícil pudiera ser para ti conseguir clientes? ¿Cómo es, o sea, tu experiencia? ¿Cuál es tu experiencia?
Dándole buenos servicios, tratando bien al cliente, que se sienta bien, haciéndole un pelado le guste.
So, it's easy for me to get clients because I try to please them by providing them with a good service and trying that they are feel nice here. That's all for me.
Complacerlo en el servicio, que se vaya satisfecho.
The formula is simple, is to please them, and when the moment they step out of my place, they are satisfied with the service provided.
Chris, how are you doing?
I'm more relaxed now.
And how do you usually do your hair yourself?
Just with clippers and straight over my head.
Yeah. Mm? Looks like he's doing kind of the same.
He's doing exactly the same as I did.
And is this the bottom of his house, or has he rented this space? How did he come? How was he able to get this?
Estoy hablando en inglés. Esta habitación es parte de tu casa o tú la alquilas.
Es mi casa. Mi casa está la sala de mi casa. Es una casita chiquita de un cuarto, un baño, una cocinita.
You are right, this is the living room of my home. This is my home is a very small one, you know, and I have adapted to my job, you know.
So at the end of the day, when he's finished with all his haircuts, this becomes his living room?
Sí, entonces cuando terminas el día, se convierte en tu salita aquí, o sea,
ah,
aquí
sí, de nuevo.
Sí, sí. Oh, you are right, that's the point. I take all the furniture inside and it becomes my living room. You are right, that's the point.
And I'll just describe it. It has a little terrace outside and there's a little modest sign above the door which just says Barbaria. And it's a white painted room, sort of breeze blocks, with a little curtain blocking the entrance to what I imagine is the rest of his house. And can he tell us now what about one of the best haircuts he's ever done?
Sí, que se nos puede decir cuál es, a quién o cuál ha sido de los mejores pelados que le has hecho aquí. A ver, si tienes alguna historia o alguna anécdota, alguien que se haya salido muy tan satisfecho, ¿entiendes?
No, yo participé en una competencia, cogí segundo lugar.
¿Aquí en Pinar del
Río? Aquí en Pinar del Río.
So I was second place in a kind of competition between among barbers in Pinar del Río. So it was a long time ago, but I remember it very well. In the 1980s, I ranked second in that competition. And I keep it always in my mind.
Do you like coffee?
Claro.
That's a way to say.
And now your hairdressing experience is about to involve a coffee. How do you feel about that?
That's good. That's really good.
Well, he was talking about his good customer service, so I think we are seeing that in action now.
I'm just like that. This kind of this type of guy, you know. Always ready to help the others, you know,
and to be pleasant to others.
It's great standing here actually, because as the barber is cutting Chris's hair, outside on the past the terrace, there are horse-drawn carriages going past, which is the method of transport here. Are these just for short journeys, or do these horse-drawn carriages? Is that the main method of transport in Pinar del Río?
Por ellos mismos.
There are many of these carriages, and they prepare the carriages themselves, and they look for the horses, you know? And there are many here in Pinar del Río, as well. There are a lot of them, indeed.
So I notice now that he's just about to, he's put shaving cream on Chris's forehead. Can he explain what he's about to do? Because I've never seen this before.
Sí, nota este tipo de pelado que no lo había visto antes. ¿Qué puedes decir sobre el pelado que has hecho? A ver, ¿cómo tú lo describirías?
Es un pelado estándar que la gente se lo hacen bastante aquí.
Sí, this is a standard hair cutting in Cuba. Most men and boys do have it here with me, and it is very liked by my customers.
Y a mí me gusta hacerlo.
And I really enjoy making this kind of haircut.
Esa moda es francesa.
This is a French style, you know, it's French style.
La patilla finita, esa es Francia.
And this also, this kind of whiskers, no? How can I say, sideburns are French. It's good.
Yeah, David, you seem to like thin sculpted sideburns as well.
Yes, it was, some barber recommended me to have this kind of sideburns. Yo le explico que con mi cara larga, un barbero me recomendó que tuviera las patillas.
La patilla larga, sí, luego lo ofrecía arrancado.
Sí, me recomendó que las usara así. Yes, he agrees with the barber, my barber. He says that I should be in a long face. I need to have this kind of sideburns, long and thin sideburns. So I'm proud to have one.
Yeah. He says you've got a long, thin face, and therefore you need long, thin sideburns.
Yes, he is a stylist, you know. He's recommending me that.
Okay, what about Chris? What kind of sideburns does he need?
Y en caso de Chris, le recomienda así esas patillas,
sí,
está bien,
sí,
para su cara.
Le queda bien, le queda
so
bien.
In the case of Chris, they are very good, because Chris is not
okay.
A tall man.
El cabello de él tiene mucho remolino, ¿eh?
So because of the Chris hairs has a different... I don't know how to say in English, twisted,
yeah.
Some way, and it is better for him to be cut, to have this kind of haircut.
Well, so you're getting a stylist appointment here as well, Chris.
I'm extremely pleased.
Él quiere saber. Amando.
Danilo
wants to know if you like your haircut.
Yeah,
sí. Very, very, very good. Extremely good.
So in English we say top hole.
Top?
Top hole.
Top hole.
Hole. H-O-L-E.
I should explain.
Well, it should probably be something to do with golf.
Yeah, I should explain that I've never heard that expression before. Daniel's just dusting Chris down now with a little brush, which has some talc in it. He's given you a tidy up at the front. He's changed your hairline. He's given you a shaver with the clippers. How do you feel?
Wicked. Absolutely wicked. I feel like a different man.
You need a wassail and coffee.
Ah, wassail and coffee.
Having the coffee.
He said, wassail and coffee.
And now he's going to make us some coffee. Fantastic.
Well, here we have Olga Lidia. She is another customer of Danilo, and she has been receiving this service for 20 years. So she even have pictures of the time she started to be his client.
So we've been here now for about an hour and a half. Chris has had a haircut. David's had a haircut, and now our new friend has arrived for her haircut. She's been coming here for 20 years.
David.
And it's turned into a party. We're having coffee, now we're having rum. Is this normal in Cuba when you go for a haircut?
Bueno, ella, la amiga dice que aquí tenemos a todos. Nos han pelado a David, pelaron a Chris, ahora pelan a la amiga.
Y
hemos tomado rum, hemos tomado café. Es normal.
Ahora podemos tomar más.
Es normal en Cuba este tipo de servicios,
sí.
Sí. It's rather common, yeah, that barbers have friends in the community, yes.
Looks good.
Marrón.
No.
Dice que luces muy bien.
Sí.
Go.
It's like we go quiet in here for 30 seconds and we're immediately offered more coffee, more rum. We only came for a haircut and we're getting served coffee and rum. It's fantastic.
You tell him we'll come back tomorrow.
Yeah.
For a coffee and a rum.
Él quiere regresar mañana para otro corte y.
Before getting back to Havana, you pass by Danilo. Danilo, ¿a qué hora abres por la mañana? ¿A las 8? ¿A las 9?
A las 9.
A las 9, at 9. At 9 a.m., he will be open for you.
Okay.
For everybody, for his clients.
Haircuts all round then, I think.
Chris, you can get another
haircut
tomorrow.
Okay.
Mañana tiene otro pelado con Chris.
No, I think it's my turn tomorrow.
Oh, wow. Well, why not?
Hasta mañana. Mañana regresamos para más ron. Gracias, Daniela. Chao.
Give him a little time to readjust.
Send us a postcard.
No.
Gosh.
John Wayne, aren't you?
I do have something to ask.
Spike this. Command me to leave.
Wow! This is a real rude monster bus.
Hey there, Patrick.
Bring the fun back into traffic.
There's a new flick with Alana Turner at the Odeon.
Has it a name?
Yes.
I'll tidy this up.
No!
The weather looks okay, it'll be a breeze.
Really?
You can talk if you want it, I won't mind.
I can't see a thing in this blackout.
Oh, I miss my bus.
Remember, don't get anywhere wrong.
Get some cans of pop in here. You fancy it?
What are you doing?
Go!
Bashing
your hands up, that is.
Oh,
I don't know how
to
see
that.
I'm just
doing
my job.
Are you a nurse or something?
Jesus Christ! Oh!
Oh, I'm very honoured. I mean it, kid. Now, come on.
Sight. How's sight to look at?
Ah, gym lad.
Man.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Where are you going?
Go on, piss off, mate.
Please, my God. A big one.
I built a raft and I'm going to sail to Australia.
What a lovely, lovely cake.
I suppose I have to say, it was my best day in the end.
You may go now. I'll ring if I need you.
What's the matter? Signal. Yes.
Do your worst.
I think you should. Oh,
never.
No. You'd better make some new arrangement for yourself. Go to London.
I can't help it if you're so disagreeable to women.
What did it mean to you? Say it. Once more, Henry. Say it.
No one can listen to that.
Ever fantasize about smashing Eddie into the ground?
No, not exactly. No.
I asked Clara, what happened to me?
It's his blood sugar.
Oh, God, look at her.
I didn't know what I was going to do. I didn't know what I could do.
Nothing.
The stronger, the better. And double, please.
Make sure you don't get one. Promise me. I'm a bit frightened of dogs.
And another, please. Double.
Not for long. Just you wait till I get changed. I'm the same. Just the same.
What happened to my whiskey?
I'm going to attach these wires to the bedside table.
Jason, Franco, Benji's, Gagabar, go!
Yeah, I think it's recorded. I think it's...
Yes.
Is it recording?
Yes.
Yes, it is.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
Hello, Alice. Vera. We're all at Sweeney's and Charlie's. This is Christmas Day. We've had a lovely... We've been here since Wednesday and we've enjoyed it. We're going home tomorrow. Lynn is here. And Billy. And Jackie here. We've had to cover Jackie up because he's been talking his head off. Have you, what sort of a Christmas have you had? Now, here's Rini.
Hello, Aunt Alice, Vera. Hope you have a lovely Christmas, like we are. We've got Linda home this year, which is a change. And it's nice seeing her. She's upstairs just now, but she'll be coming in shortly. I always sound a proper time trader when I'm on the tape. So I'm knocked out a bit slow now. Charlie?
Hello, Hilda, Alice. Sir Charlie here. What on earth does one say at a time like this? Except I hope you have a very happy time this Christmas. And if you think of it sometimes.
She's still a mini doctor.
Aye.
Yes,
she hasn't got her middies on.
Ring your bells, Annie Alice. Go on, there's a clever lad.
Come on, speak to Annie Alice. That's it.
Ring your bell.
Come on.
Come on.
Be a good boy. Speak to Annie Alice.
Doesn't want to say anything, but she's going to sing Jingle Bells, I think.
Of the spot, son.
Yeah, but what's that?
This?
Yeah.
This is what you call a tape recorder.
But it doesn't sing.
No. No, it doesn't, does it? I'll show you how it works in a minute, shall I? Me?
Who's going to be on it?
Who's going to be on it?
Yeah.
I think you'll be on it.
I think you will, because it's yours.
Yeah, but I think Amanda will be on it as well.
I think we'll both be singing.
Go on then, let's sing a little song.
Away in a manger, no crib for a pair, the little Lord Jesus asleep on the hay. The cackle all over, the baby awake, the little Lord Jesus lay down his heater. The stars in the background.
Side three, by the way.
You gonna pick some of these papers up, boy?
Yeah, he's ripped up all the papers.
Your daddy wants this for packing.
Yeah.
There's been a lot of snow today, haven't we?
Yeah.
A lot of snow.
Yeah. I reckon we're paying for last summer now.
Where was we last summer? Oh,
here we are. Yeah. Dude, get up.
No, it's
party. Hey. Yeah. I'm just having a beer.
Well, that's not the first today.
No.
Is it?
No.
I count them, you know.
Oh, wow. She's got me rationed.
Yeah,
it'll be about the 18th of January, March, when we arrive in England. All being well, I would say for 10 days, approximately. Of course, things could change.
Oh, it's snowed again.
Is it?
Yeah,
snowed
again.
Snowed again. Look out. Oh, look out, dude. You're fighting me.
Say hello to Marge.
Say hello,
dude.
Marge. Say hi, Marge.
Hi, Marge.
Hi, Bill.
Say hi, Bill.
Hi, Bill.
What's Santa Claus bringing you? Banana. Banana.
What's Santa Claus bringing you, dude? What's he going to bring you?
What's that? What's that, Marge? What's bringing you? Oh, don't do that. That's naughty to put. Yeah.
What's Santa Claus bringing you?
What's he bringing me?
Well, you've got me, haven't you?
Yeah. Oh,
what
a surprise.
I'll give you a surprise.
I got you.
I'll give you a surprise.
That's not a surprise anymore.
Isn't it?
It's a joke.
We got the Christmas tree.
It's a shock.
We got the Christmas tree up. And all the lights burning.
Rotten shot. Well, dude, get down off of me. Look at him.
Yeah, rough.
Look at my hair style.
Come on, dude, one of them.
It's just snowing, isn't it?
Is it?
Yeah.
Oh, it's terrible now.